This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. The AP's Jackie Quinn reports the Republican-led House of Representatives passed a measure that demands the White House send weapons to Israel.
The House has approved a bill to undo President Biden's pause on some weapon shipments to Israel and to rebuke his actions. Republican lawmakers have accused President Biden of abandoning Israel by putting on hold a shipment of some 3,500 bombs that could be used for a Rafah offensive, and they voted to force the weapons transfer. House Speaker Mike Johnson before the vote.
This should not be a partisan issue. It is shameful that it has become that. We have to stand with our closest ally, Israel. They are the only stable democracy in the Middle East. They are one of our closest friends.
More than a dozen Democrats joined with House Republicans to pass the measure to help arm Israel. But Democratic leaders in the Senate say it won't get a vote there. I'm Jackie Quinn.
The United States says it completed a pier to bring humanitarian aid to Gaza by sea, but no one will know if the new route will work until a steady stream of deliveries begins reaching Palestinians. The U.S. Agency for International Development's Sonali Khoury says security is a concern.
There is a very insecure operating environment, and the deconfliction measures are not where they need to be yet, given the complexity of the environment. So those conversations are ongoing. They need to continue, and they need to get to a place where humanitarian aid workers feel safe and secure and able to operate safely. And I don't think we're there yet.
And for more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Israel's defense minister said additional Israeli troops would enter Rafah as military operations escalate in southern Gaza. In remarks issued by his office Thursday, Israeli forces earlier this month took control of the Gaza side of the Rafah crossing with Egypt, despite objections from Israel's key ally, the United States, over concerns about civilian safety. While Israel has depicted the southern Gaza city as the last Hamas stronghold. The arrest of U.S. tourists in Turks and Caicos Islands for carrying ammunition has prompted pleas from three U.S. governors. We get the details from the AP's Lisa Dwyer.
Five Americans are facing prison sentences of up to 12 years in the Turks and Caicos Islands on charges that they illegally carried ammunition while in the popular tourist destination about 600 miles southeast of Miami. Three of those arrests have prompted pleas for mercy from the governors of Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, who say the three inadvertently had ammunition in their luggage. The British territory significantly tightened its gun laws in 2022. While the island's courts do have sentencing discretion for exceptional circumstances, by law they cannot just pay a fine. That means that the Americans may not get 12 years in prison, but they also likely won't be able to just pay a fine and then just return home. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
The AP's Karen Chalmers now reports on the health of Slovakia's prime minister after an assassination attempt.
Slovak authorities have charged a man with attempting to assassinate populist prime minister Robert Fico, saying the suspect acted alone. Interior Minister Matus Sutaj-Istok said that the investigation found that the assassination was clearly a politically motivated act. The minister did not specify what the motivation was, but blamed media outlets and the opposition. His victory led to thousands of people on the streets across Slovakia to protest many policies, including taking control of public media. I'm Karen Chamas.
Chinese President Xi Jinping praised the relationship between China and Russia and pledged to deepen their partnership as he hosted Russian President Vladimir Putin for talks in Beijing. Putin, who is on a two-day visit to China, called the relationship a stabilizing factor in the world and said Russia-China ties are not directed against anyone. In response to the meeting, the United States on Thursday said Beijing can't improve its relations with the West and support Putin at the same time. As always, for details and much more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Mobile units of Russian troops are attempting to capture Ukrainian villages.
China and Russia pledged to deepen their defense and military ties.
Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin on Thursday presenting a united front against what they cast as increasing U.S. aggression.
And she made history as the first woman to win an Olympic medal for Iran. Now, after defecting, she's planning to compete for Bulgaria in Paris.
I feel here is my second home, and I want to represent Bulgaria in my competition.
Today is Friday, May 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Armata! Russian forces are expanding their attacks on Ukrainian border settlements close to the northeastern city of Kharkiv. U.S. and European weapons are due to arrive on the front lines in the coming weeks following months of delays. Henry Ridgewell says they're trying to push back Moscow's invading troops.
Mobile units of Russian troops are attempting to capture Ukrainian villages some 30 kilometers north of the city of Kharkiv. Ukraine has fired missiles from the border region into Russia. Patrick Berry is a defense analyst at Britain's Bath University.
The way they're set up and the amount of troops that they have, you know, maybe 30 to 40,000, not that much armor, attacking in small groups of infantry. It doesn't really suggest that they're trying to sort of encircle Kharkiv or anything like that.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky arrived in Kharkiv Thursday, having cancelled all foreign travel. Kyiv said its defensive moves had slowed the speed of Moscow's advance. Again, Patrick Berry.
They're outgunned at about at least 5 or 6 to 1 at the moment by Russian shells.
Ukrainian forces are still waiting for the bulk of the weapons deliveries under the United States $60 billion aid package that was finally passed last month after a six-month delay. Ukrainian lawmaker Serhiy Rachmanin, a member of the Parliamentary Committee on National Security, said the United States aid is crucial, so the unfortunate pause in the delivery of arms had a significant impact on the situation at the front, and this is what we are seeing now. Ukraine says Russian jets and missiles are able to attack their positions before infantry move in. Kyiv has repeatedly asked for more air defense systems. The next 3 months will be crucial for Ukraine, and the Russians currently have a window of opportunity, said lawmaker Serhiy Rachmanin. The power of Ukrainian armed forces has decreased, and Russians feel it, he added. They have amassed quite a sufficient amount of resources, weapons, ammunition, manpower, and now they are trying to use up a maximum of their reserves. They are trying to spread our forces thin across the entire front line. Can Ukraine and its Western allies turn the tide of the war? Again, analyst Patrick Berry.
The chances of them taking back significant territory now in the medium term seem to be slipping away. Unless there's some sort of step change in Western support, a large force generation package and a long-term strategy for what success looks like, none of which at the moment are forthcoming. I think Ukraine stays on the defensive and holds what it has.
Analysts say Russia has been able to rebuild its military strength over the past 6 months with the help of China, Iran and North Korea. And that makes any future Ukrainian offensive more difficult. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin pledged to deepen their countries' already close defense and military ties. Putin's two-day visit to Beijing comes as Russia is increasingly dependent on Chinese and North Korea for help in Ukraine. Here's Reuters correspondent Lauren Anthony with more.
Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin on Thursday presenting a united front against what they cast as increasing U.S. aggression. The pair pledged to deepen already close defense and military ties. Xi and Putin's Beijing meeting came just days after Russia opened a new front in Ukraine, with its troops advancing in the northeastern region of Kharkiv.
She said both he and Putin had agreed that a political settlement to the Ukraine crisis was the, quote, right direction. In a joint statement, they added that both countries were opposed to a drawn-out conflict in the country.
We are grateful to Chinese friends and colleagues for the initiatives they put forward to solve this problem.
Putin's schedule also included a gala celebration marking 75 years since the Soviet Union recognized the People's Republic of China and a tea ceremony.
I reiterated our serious concern about the PRC providing components that are powering Russia's brutal war of aggression against Ukraine.
The cozy meeting of the two allies was a clear snub to Washington, who sent U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken to China last month in an effort to persuade Beijing to scale back its relationship with Moscow. Xi signaled that Beijing and Moscow saw eye to eye on a range of important issues and that they would resist Western pressure to downgrade their ties. Their statement also spoke of concerns around what they say are U.S. efforts to violate the strategic nuclear balance, global U.S. missile defenses that threaten Russia and China, and U.S. plans for high-precision non-nuclear weapons. While speaking at the opening ceremony of the Russia and China Year of Culture, Putin said he felt so comfortable in China that he forgot to pause for the translator.
I feel very much at home, therefore decided that everyone speaks Russian here. We will continue to act in unison for the successful development of the two countries, the prosperity of the two peoples, to increase the authority and influence of Russia and China in the world.
The U.S. cast China as its biggest competitor and Russia as its biggest nation-state threat. U.S. President Joe Biden has said this century will be defined by an existential contest between democracies and autocracies. Putin and Xi share a broad world view. They cast the West as decadent and declining, just as China challenges U.S. supremacy in everything from tech to espionage and hard military power.
Reuters correspondent Lauren Anthony. It's just days till the inauguration of Taiwan's new president, Li Qingde. VOA's William Yang says the new leader will face growing pressure from China.
The future of Taiwan, at least for the next 4 years, largely depends on the actions of the island's next president, Lai Qingde. Residents here have a few expectations.
I think the Lai administration will continue the same foreign policy agenda that focuses on maintaining close ties with the United States and Japan.
I believe leaders and people in Taiwan and China all want both sides of the Taiwan Strait to maintain the status quo for the next 4 years.
On the day he was elected as Taiwan's next president, Lai laid out his Beijing policy.
As long as there is dignity and parity to two sides of the strait, Taiwan is very willing to engage in dialogue with China and willing to exchange, to cooperate for the benefit of the people on both sides of the strait, to create a free and prosperous environment.
But Beijing has labeled Lai with strong words, says geopolitical analyst Amanda Shell.
They called Lai a secessionist, a golden grandchild of Taiwanese independence.
Beijing claims Taiwan, a self-governed democracy, as part of China. Relations between Beijing and Taipei soured since Taiwan's current president Tsai Ing-wen came to power 8 years ago. Beijing has been increasing military pressure during her presidency. Lai is from the same party as Tsai and is expected to face more pressure from China after he takes office on May 20th. During Lai's presidency, he'll also have to manage China's exploitation of political divisions within Taiwan.
So Beijing does see greater political divisions in Taiwan as useful to its ultimate goal of unification. So it is a form of political interference.
Shao says the U.S. may play a role in Beijing's relationship with Taiwan's new president.
Beijing's approach, it seems, at least for now, is really to lean on Washington to keep the incoming Lai administration on a more moderate course.
Taiwan will also continue to look to the U.S. to help bolster itself against China by strengthening relations with Washington. A bipartisan delegation of former U.S. officials will attend Lai's inauguration. Since 2022, President Tsai has met with two separate U.S. House speakers, says political scientist Lev Nachman.
She most certainly is going to be remembered as the president under which the U.S.-Taiwan relationship reached this new level of a rock-solid status.
But whether the rock-solid status continues may depend on who is elected the next president of the United States, says Nachman.
What Joe Biden represents is a level of predictability and certainty. If Donald Trump is elected, that brings in uncertainty.
President Lai is also expected to deepen engagements with European nations as he begins to navigate the increasingly divided global landscape as the new president of Taiwan. William Yang, VOA News, Taipei, Taiwan.
Slovak authorities charged a man Thursday with attempting to assassinate Prime Minister Robert Fico, saying he acted alone in a politically motivated attack that left the longtime leader in serious but stable condition. Slovakian President-elect Peter Pellegrini.
He is able to speak but only a few sentences, and then he's really, really tired because he's under some medication. So, of course, it is very difficult for him. But I had the chance that I came in the right moment when he was able to speak with me a few sentences. But the situation is very critical, and we have to give him a lot of energy and think and be positive.
Fico's pro-Russia views have contributed to deep divisions in the small European country, which borders Ukraine. Following these other stories from around the world, Panama's next government is considering erecting new checkpoints along a stretch of thick jungle on its southern border that has become a treacherous part of the journey for growing masses of U.S.-bound migrants. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration on Thursday granted accelerated approval to Amgen's targeted immunotherapy for adults in the advanced stages of hard-to-treat small cell lung cancer that has worsened despite chemotherapy. The drug is designed to attach a cancer cell and an immune cell, bringing them together so the body's immune system can kill the cancer. Nigeria and Senegal vowed to promote democracy in West Africa on Thursday as new Senegalese President Bassirou Diomaye made his first official visit. West Africa has seen a number of coups, and Nigerian President Bola Ahmed Tinubu said Nigeria and Senegal had a shared interest in democracy and urged Faye to persuade them to come back into the fold. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, U.S. voters have several ways to cast their ballots in a presidential election, including by mail. Many Democrats have embraced mail-in voting, and now Republicans are being urged by party leaders, including former President Donald Trump, to use all voting options in the 2024 general election. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
Enthusiasm about the November general election in the United States is average among voters, according to a recent Gallup poll. But it's a right that some people told VOA Spanish should not be taken for granted. Duke University student Pilar Kelly.
Voting is kind of the most fundamental way of making your voice heard.
Republican voter Jenny Wilson said people must vote for things that will help the country. Americans can vote in person on Election Day or early at special polling locations. They can also send their ballots via the U.S. Postal Service. Will Adler is with the Bipartisan Policy Center. He was interviewed via Skype.
Every state in the country allows some form of mail-in voting. The way that they differ is in how much they require an excuse, such as the voter being away from their home or their polling place on Election Day.
Where states offer vote-by-mail programs instead of absentee ones, registered voters receive their ballots automatically before Election Day. Social distancing measures at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic boosted mail-in voting. More Democrats than Republicans embraced it during the 2020 and 2022 election cycles, according to Pew Research surveys. The messaging by President Joe Biden on the matter has been consistent throughout the years.
Voting by mail is a safe and convenient way to get more people to vote.
Biden's predecessor, Donald Trump, who is again running for president, has repeatedly expressed concern that voting by mail could lead to fraud.
Absentee is good. Mail-in universal is very, very bad. There's no way they're going to get it accurately.
Since 2023, however, several Republican politicians have stressed the need for the electorate to use all forms of voting. Trump has also shown an openness to it. On May 9th, he stressed on his Truth Social platform that, quote, absentee voting, early voting, and election day voting are all good options. Groups trying to mobilize Republican voters say they want to chip away at the voting-by-mail advantage Democrats have established. Max Doxey, political director for the Republican State Leadership Committee via Skype.
The more voters that we can bring to the table in early voting and absentee voting in vote-by-mail through our efforts, the better position we'll be going into election night.
The Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee told VOA in a statement it doubts the Republican voters will be persuaded to shift their views. The committee also warned about legislation being considered by state Republicans to block mail-in ballots with minor errors and ban ballot drop boxes. Experts say it isn't easy to predict how voting by mail could impact this year's election result. Michael McDonald, professor of political science at the University of Florida, via Skype.
If you make mail balloting easier, then you do see higher turnout. It's not clear that there's a strong effect on the partisan outcomes, but because, again, even Republicans will want to vote and they'll find ways of voting.
McDonald expressed confidence that the safeguards that election officials have in place will reduce the already historically small chances of fraudulent votes being cast in a presidential election. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Hundreds of thousands of people have fled Gaza's southern city of Rafah, and many more on the move as fighting between Israel and Hamas intensifies near the border with Egypt. Palestinian families say they have no safe place to go and no aid when they get there. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from Istanbul with Nidal Hamduna, Amjad Tanesh, and Ines Tanesh in Rafah.
Imtiaz Issam Abu Ida and her six children had already fled the war in Gaza four times when leaflets began falling recently, warning residents to evacuate Rafah, which was considered the last safe city. Since then, Abu Ida and hundreds of thousands of other people, mostly already displaced multiple times, have fled deeper into Gaza as the war near the Egyptian border intensifies and humanitarian aid remains stuck in trucks on the other side. Nowhere is safe, says Abu Ida, adding that her son has to travel far to get the family barely enough drinking water to survive. How many times do we have to flee? She asks. In this desert encampment near the war-torn city of Khan Yunis, families say there are virtually no basic supplies like medicine, food, water, or enough materials to build shelters. Even more devastating, say displaced families, is the feeling that they have been abandoned by the world as peace talks continue amid increased violence. Mohammed Mansour Al-Zanoun, another displaced parent, says he cannot imagine how in modern times people can be killed without reason. The World Food Program said on Wednesday it will run out of food and fuel stocks in Gaza in a matter of days. Last week, the organization said famine is already full-blown in northern Gaza, with the rest of the strip at risk. Aid groups say the Gaza healthcare system collapsed months ago. For Nidal Hamduna, Amjan Tantesh, and Ines Tantesh outside Khan Yunis, Gaza, Heather Murdoch, VOA News.
And finally, Khamia Alizadeh made history by becoming the first Iranian woman to win an Olympic medal back in 2016. After defecting, the Taekwondo athlete is aiming for gold at this year's Paris Games under Bulgaria's flag. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino has her story for us.
Khamia Alizadeh is no stranger to breaking new ground at the Olympics. After competing in Tokyo for the refugee Olympic team, she will represent her new home of Bulgaria in Paris this year. Alizadeh will be the first person to represent the country in Taekwondo.
I wake up every day for the gold medal in Paris, and I'm trying my best, and I put my 100% to achieve this goal.
While she was seen as a hero to Iranian women after winning bronze in 2016, she decided to leave due to oppressive conditions. Alizadeh missed the podium in Tokyo.
It's a weird feeling because in Tokyo, I fought against Iran, and which she was my best friend and my roommate. It's really a weird feeling. I can't explain in words. But this is the fight, this is the game, and every athlete's doing their best to represent their country.
The 25-year-old had received offers from other countries looking for her to represent them, but she says the decision to compete for Bulgaria was clear.
I felt like home, and I really liked the warm welcome, and I was really comfortable, and I felt here is my second home, and I want to represent Bulgaria in my competition from now on.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Central to the U.S. strategy concerning cyberspace is the effort to build digital solidarity, working together to offer mutual assistance to the victims of malicious cyber activity and other digital harms, wrote Secretary of State Antony Blinken in the recently released United States International Cyberspace and Digital Policy Strategy. An example of digital solidarity is the work undertaken by the United States when the government of Germany reached out after it detected malicious cyber activity perpetrated by the Russian group APT-28 that was targeting a German political party, said U.S. Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Bureau of Cyberspace and Digital Policy, Jennifer Backus.
It came to us. It asked us to join in attributing this activity. It gave us information that we were able to verify. And we were very pleased to be able to support this attribution both bilaterally and through NATO. We came together with the EU and NATO allies in condemning the activity and supporting efforts to counter disruptive cyber activities and hold malicious cyber actors accountable.
Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Backus pointed out that APT-28 is part of the Russian Federation's General Staff Main Intelligence Directorate, the GRU, and is a well-known malicious cyber entity with a very long history of engaging in destabilizing and disruptive behavior.
The United States has previously indicted and sanctioned actors associated with APT-28 for their involvement in a wide range of malign cyber activities, such as the sustained hack and leak operations that targeted the World Anti-Doping Agency and cyber activities aimed at interfering in the 2016 U.S. presidential elections. Of course, these are just a few of the many malign, disruptive, and destabilizing activities associated with APT-28.
In terms of the attack in Germany, the U.S. Department of Justice helped remediate the network of small office and home office routers that were used by APT-28 to prosecute its attacks, and the United States helped to block the GRU from regaining access to the remediated devices. We all need to recognize that there are malicious, persistent cyber actors out there who will continue to seek opportunities to carry out destabilizing cyber intrusions, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Backus. We need digital solidarity, which means to work together on shared goals, to stand together, to help partners build capacity, and to provide mutual support.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the